Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and now up on TSN 2. Brian Hazio, Doug Jeff O'Neill, Jonas Siegel from The Athletic, Brent Burns of the San Jose Sharks a little bit later in the hour. He's into the acting world. He's acting on the show Viking, which is on History, and his character, I guess, debuted this past week, and we'll catch up with Brent a little bit later in the hour. And it was a close one last night. They were up early on St. Louis, and Sharks have been putting up some numbers, you know, and Brent Burns is one of those guys where a couple of years ago, he had 82 points a couple of years ago, and he was kind of a microcosm of the whole team last year. It just didn't work out for him. I think he had some injury problems, and the Sharks just kind of faded, like, quicker than I was expecting, like, out of nowhere. They were a competitive team year in, year out. Then it was like, what the hell happened to this group?
We got to ask him about the scenario, too, out in San Jose. They're not even allowed to play games.
Right.
It's like every game that they play home, like there's no San Jose home games. I'm assuming it's Arizona they're going to. I don't know why they wouldn't go down to LA or
Anaheim. They've been in Arizona. That's what was, I guess it's all about the counties and obviously different governments throughout the state, but LA is at home. Anaheim's at home. Yet San Jose isn't. And I guess that's about the Bay Area and the jurisdiction up there and the different government officials that are making different calls. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into that with Brent Burns at around 6:40. Some news about your boy, Tiger Woods, who's having a tough week, you know, week and a half, because the Tiger documentary debuted.
Garbage. That was garbage.
You didn't like it?
No, I thought it was garbage. I think I could have done that documentary because all it was pulling YouTube clips, and then they grabbed a couple stiffs off the driving range where his dad was a member, and they got him to rat out some tales. They should be ashamed of themselves. And they got some other girls to tell stories about the antics off the golf course. Other than that, it was garbage. Mm. I thought it was garbage.
But they got his caddy.
Stevie Williams. Yeah, he was good, and I don't think he bashed Tiger. Not that I care if that happens either way. Our boss certainly does. Earl, our boss. But I just thought the documentary, I thought it was poorly done, and I thought it was just it was just somebody made it in their basement. It was terrible.
It was tabloid-esque. Like that's what it felt like. You know, you get certain people on the screen and it's Tiger Woods' friend. I'm like, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, and the poor dad, the friend of the dads, like the two buddies of the dads, the guy passes away, and then you're going to go and tell the little tales, you know. You guys should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, I haven't seen it all. I've seen bits and pieces of both of them because they've been on Crave consistently. So I catch it, I check it out. I have not seen start to finish, so I don't even know the parts that you're referencing. But I saw a couple of different, you know, different members or different people that have come in and out of the life of Tiger Woods, speaking openly, and I'm not here to dispute any of the accuracy. It's just, you know, I'm more curious now about the golf game. Like, that's what I noticed watching this with Tiger. Like, I was as captivated as anybody else when the story broke, U.S. Thanksgiving in 2009, and then day after day after day, there was another story and another woman and another, you know, scandal. It was just crazy. And I was in it. I was caught up in that storm like everyone else. I was captivated. It's been 10 years now. And I got everything I possibly could out of that. If we're talking about a Tiger Woods documentary, I want it to be about him playing the sport. You know,
well,
that's just my preference.
That. And like Jeff, like the only part I think he talked was about his back. Like, I'm pretty sure that was the only, like, he must have agreed that was the only thing he was going to talk about, because they got him for the doc, but only about the back injury.
I bet that was from something else.
Oh, was it?
They just plucked that from something else.
He wasn't a part of that.
He was not signing off on any part of that documentary.
Oh, okay.
The one thing I do not understand is that night where he was arrested in Florida, I do not even know how he got that car 5 feet off of his driveway. Like, the pain meds and the sleeping medication, like, he was... like, for him to have, he could consider himself lucky being alive after that one, because he didn't even know what planet he was on.
Yeah, on a number of different fronts. Like, that is what has become clear with the reporting, and to credit this documentary, the pieces that I have seen that I can reference, like, it does paint a picture of a guy who, you know, he was driven, but I think his parents clearly had a plan for him. I don't dispute any of that. And, you know, they saw where he was going. They understood his talents, and I guess to their credit, they cultivated them, and they protected him in whichever way they saw fit. But as a result, this guy has been a robot, and he's
Dude,
gone
that's
through a
what
lot.
It was, that's what it was with him. From the time he was 2 years old, it was golf ball, golf ball. Don't become friends with anybody. You're breaking up with that girl. And then he got a little sniff of what Vegas was all about, and hanging out with the boys out there, and he's like,
this is a different scene. Yeah, this is. There's some intrigue here, but even with, you know, the story about U.S. Thanksgiving when he originally got in the accident and he and his wife Elin, like that was the beginning of the end. And the Rachel Uchitel was saying, you know, he sent her a text saying, "I'm popping an Ambien and going to sleep." Like that's not normal activity. Like just popping an Ambien to shut the mill down generally means A, your body has been broken down. Or you got so much going on, you can't sleep. You know, there might be a different reason for it, but if you're basically self-diagnosing yourself, and that's kind of what it felt like with Tiger, you know, and then it coincides with the story today, which it has nothing to do with 10 or 12 years ago, but in terms of what we're talking about here, I guess he had back surgery again. So he's had another back surgery. He's going to miss tournaments that he was supposed to play in at Torrey Pines and Riviera.
Yeah, and our boss Earl is going to be devastated about this because the one thing about Phil Mickelson, he has the flexibility, he has the power, but how many times have you said Phil Mickelson, have you read, Phil's going in for surgery? I haven't read that. I've never heard that. So I don't know if he can put the game together to have success, but I don't know if Tiger physically can even play anymore. Because we saw it at the Masters last year, and we all know the routine. Once he starts sliding down the leaderboard, he grabs his ass cheek because his glutes aren't firing, and his lower back is stiff. But what does this really mean as far as him physically being able to swing a golf club?
I don't know, because we did this for a long time. And then
dude,
he goes
we've
out
done this five times. He played in San Diego Hayes where he was dwarf on golf around the greens. We were laughing about it on the Monday, saying this guy was chili dipping it. For fun. Mm-hmm. It was the most ridiculous. Sure enough, he grabbed his ass cheek. He was out of that tournament. We've been doing this for 6 years.
We've been doing it for a long time.
But this guy always comes out on the other side of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm going to learn from past mistakes. Now he's older. I don't know how extensive this surgery is, but you know, a back surgery is, it means something, you know, and especially when it's your, you know, fifth back surgery in 15 years.
I just don't see it happening, man.
I'm not sure either because even the way he played Augusta, like the first round, what did he shoot, a 66 or so, or 68? I think he was 4 under par. And, like, that was a great start, and we all allowed ourselves to run with the imagination, connecting his story to Nicklaus in 86, where he was in the leaderboard, all that kind of stuff. I fell for it, you fell for it, because you want to believe it because it's such an incredible story. But we continued to comment on the way he was playing on Thursday, Friday, and the next Monday. This guy wasn't going for greens, like par fives. He's like laying up, like he. It wasn't the same Tiger Woods. It looked like a guy who acknowledged he didn't have the capabilities of playing the way Dustin Johnson does.
No, especially these modern day guys, the way they play that golf. Like those, literally, Bryson DeChambeau wasn't kidding when they view that course as a par 68. I think all the top players probably think of it like that, but they just don't say it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's driver, mid-iron, every par five, and Tiger wasn't doing that.
Tiger was laying up on par fives. Like, yes. And he clearly wasn't doing that in 97. I mean, he was doing what these guys – in 97, he was driver 8-iron in on par fives.
Yeah.
But it was – even through the early 2000s into the mid-2000s, he was still looking at par fives at Augusta saying, I got to go for it.
The one thing I found
he wasn't doing that this year.
I found it greasy when he fired Stevie, when he caddied one event with Adam Scott. It's like Stevie was your guy, and then I kind of...
Well, and then he ghosted him, hey, Jeff?
He ghosted him, and I know Earl's probably going to send an email saying, guys, don't talk about my guy Tiger like that. But I thought that was greasy, man. He went and did one event. He hadn't been working. He's like, I got to get out there. He does one event, and then Tiger says, no, you're out. I thought that was greasy.
Yeah, I mean he's gone through a lot of clearly he's a businessman and
dude, that's not being a businessman, that's being a you know what.
That is, but what my point is he has been through a number of swing coaches. He's had different people on the bag. He's had, you know, he was playing Pro Vs, then he was playing Nike, now he's at Bridgestone. Like this guy goes where the action is and he does what he believes he has to do. You know, like he is the all-powerful one, Tiger Woods. And if you're in his orbit, you almost have to bow down and do whatever he says. And if you don't, you're going to pay a price. You know, and that's the truth. And he's not alone. Like, that's what happens with presidents and CEOs. He is the president and CEO of Tiger Woods Incorporated. Yeah. And if you do something he doesn't like, it's almost like you can't act surprised. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't be – I've never heard Steve Williams talk on it, but I wouldn't be shocked if off the record he was like, yeah, you know, he did say don't do it, you know.
No, he talks maybe, about yeah. that on the record in the doc.
Okay, well, I didn't see that. So yeah. What did he say? Go ahead. Tell me. Enlighten me.
He basically said exactly what you just said. Like, he said, I'm going to do it. Are you okay with it? And then he did it, and then he just never heard from him again.
Yeah. That's right. Tiger gave him the go-ahead. Yeah. Tiger said, go ahead and do it. And then all of a sudden he just says, actually, we're not working together
anymore.
You're
dead anymore. To me.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
So he went. The one funny thing that Stevie did say was at Torrey Pines of the U.S. Open, he slashes his tee drive off the first tee. He almost blows his back out standing on the cart path, and Stevie goes, maybe we should just pull out of this tournament. And Tiger Woods looked at him and said, F you, Stevie. I'm going to win the U.S. Open. Yeah. That kind of got my blood boiling, my juices flowing. I wanted to tee it up, but then I looked down and saw the sling, and I said, it's not happening.
Yeah, and it feels like -7 outside probably doesn't help either. Yeah. I haven't seen that again.
You should
I haven't
watch
seen
it.
Or heard. I plan on watching it. But my point is with Williams is, you know, sometimes you just have to understand what the reaction is going to be. You know, like, and that's not, I'm not trying to condone what Tiger Woods did. I'm not saying that.
I understand what you're saying. Were you stupid enough to not think that he
exactly.
was going to fire you
like,
for doing that?
And even if Tiger goes, oh, yeah, go ahead, the fact that you asked was the end of the road. You know, like,
right.
it's, and that's what I'm getting to is, do you know who you work with? Like, I'm Tiger Woods. You don't, no one else, like, every caddy on earth would do anything to be on the bag for me.
What I understand, he was one of the few caddies that was on a salary. He wasn't even, like, 10% of winnings.
Well,
like,
probably because it was so much money that he was going to win.
Well, he won every time he teed it up.
Exactly. So Tiger's like, I'm going to end up paying you $100 million a year here.
Yeah,
you know, I'll pay
look
you 15,
that up if you
but,
can find that, what this guy's pay schedule was, because it was not 10% of earnings.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not here to be the PR firm for Tiger Woods. I'm not saying it's –
this guy
it's,
was no angel, man.
No, and listen, this kind of stuff is cutthroat, and this kind of stuff, you know, it can make you turn on someone pretty quickly. I'm just saying it's been a reality forever with, you know, presidents, CEOs, superstars. This is kind of what comes with the territory, and everything filters down. You know, there's like a superstar like that, there's a lot of shrapnel coming off, and everyone's trying to grab a piece. And the caddy is one of them. You know, the caddy is like, hey, I'm on the bag of Tiger. I'm going to make a fortune. I'm a household name as a caddy. Like, we're talking about a caddy. I feel like Allen Iverson right now. But the reason Steve Williams is someone of fame is not because he held the bag for Adam Scott. It's because of Tiger Woods. And, you know, if you're going to be in his orbit, you kind of got to deal with his rules, as irrational as they might be.
Yeah, I kind of agree with the point you made. As soon as he asked a question about Adam Scott, that was the end of him. And when you think about it, when you're Tiger Woods' caddy, you don't say a word until that guy says, get over here and let's get fired up. And until he does, until he tells you you're off the bag, you don't say one
you
word.
You bite your lip and you say, what are you thinking here? We're about 165 out. Wind's coming in from the southwest.
Yeah.
You know, I'll grab the rake. Pass me your putter. You know, like, because it's a great – it's an unbelievable gig. You're on the – like, even if you're on a salary, I'm sure
dude,
it was –
dude, imagine the golf shots that Stevie Williams saw in his life. Like, outrageous.
Outrageous.
He saw the best golf shots ever hit on the planet for 12 years.
Well, he is one of the two people involved in maybe the most famous video shot in the history of golf. At 16 at Augusta, you know, like he's right in the middle of it all. He's the guy that's walking up and down greatest courses in the world with Tiger Woods. He's the guy hugging Tiger after Tiger wins another major. You know, it's and I don't get the impression. I have not seen what Williams said in this documentary. I don't get the impression like Williams is overly bitter because I think he understands. It was a pretty great ride.
Oh, yeah.
And he's still, you know, he's still kicking around the game. He's had a great career.
He just seemed hurt, which you could understand.
Yes, and that's something I can totally understand. Because you would think...
Tiger Woods was his best man at his wedding.
Yeah,
you,
and now he
you
just
would
doesn't
think,
talk
like,
to him.
We're closer than this. And that probably speaks to how Tiger was programmed as a kid, which I think comes out in this documentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like his parents, it's an individual sport. Don't ever forget that. You're the prize fighter. You're the guy. Don't trust people. You know, they're always going to want to just grab a piece of you, you know, or they'll bail whenever they choose to bail or whatever. And that's a tough life, too. You know, it's not like anyone's going to sympathize with someone who's worth $1 billion and has access to anything he would ever want.
Yeah, we got to get Billy Hayes to make the comment. This is all you people in radio. This is my prize possession. Brian, and please tread lightly with him.
What the hell was that? Like, that's a great tease for the documentary. Earl Woods at the podium saying what you just said. But what was that? Like, you talk about over the top. Like,
well, and I think it was when Tiger was pretty young. Like, it's a pretty crazy thing to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can just imagine Billy Hayes' version of it for Hazy. All of you grit grinders in the bars listening, that is my child. Please treasure it on the radio.
Yeah. We should get him to record something. Just very emotional and just pour it all out because we want to hear it. I think that would go over well.
That Earl, though, man, he was...
something else.
He was a character.
Yeah, it sounds like he had some things going on, too, on both sides, up and down, the whole nine. Brent Burns in about 20 minutes. The Leafs with a big win last night. How do they carry it over tomorrow night? McDavid's in town, and I think this will be the first example with the Leafs in a long time where you're like, we're just not going to be able to get in there. Like, just the buzz... There should be, but he's in town tonight. I would assume McDavid's landed by now. This would be a massive story. This is a must-see game. This is a ticket that you got to have. You got to be in the building. And sadly, none of us will be there tomorrow night or Friday night. So we'll get to that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Brent Burns will join us in about 20 minutes. The Leafs back in action tomorrow night. The Raptors back in action tomorrow night as well. And we're going to see the same two teams, you know, the rest of the week here. The Raptors play Miami two times in a row, both times in Tampa. And the Leafs have Edmonton in town tomorrow night. And the Leafs take on Edmonton and Toronto on Friday night. And the Oilers, you know, I caught a decent portion of the game last night. They had 7 power play opportunities. They went 0-for-7 last night. And outside of that, they brought nothing to the table 5-on-5.
7 nothing. Power plays with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
And they couldn't capitalize. They kept drawing power plays, and they could not get it done. And the Habs roll out of there with both wins. And now Montreal goes to Vancouver for 3 games in a row. And Vancouver doesn't look any better. Like, they are in a full-blown panic in Vancouver because the Canucks, they had a great first period last night. And then beyond that, it wasn't even close. Like, close.
You kind of got to think that whether it's ownership or Jimmy Benning, and if you talk to people, Noodles talked about how important Markstrom was to that group. And nobody ever wants to be a part of a team where your goaltender bails you out like that. But when it's that much of a lifeline like that, I think you just got
to
do
them.
At all costs, I don't know, like, just that it just was priority number one where it's like, you have to do this, and then we'll pick up the pieces after that. And I don't know what that would have took. I don't know what the offer was, but...
Well, what did he get? 6 by 6?
6 times 6.
Yep.
Yeah. Even if you go a little higher, it's not crazy.
No, Bobrovsky's making 10.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the same offer, I would assume he'd stay in Vancouver for the same offer. Like, by all accounts, he liked the market, he liked the team, he's comfortable there. Why would you leave and go down the road for the exact same contract? You know, like, it just, that wouldn't make any sense to me. How do you not match that deal and lock it in, considering how well he has played the last 2 years? Like, the reasoning may have been they have so much faith in Demko.
You do not get that faith from that one performance he had in the playoffs against Vegas or whoever it was.
The only thought process, though, right, was that they can bring in Holtby on a cheaper deal, and Demko is going to keep growing. But that's a big gamble to take. Big gamble, because if he doesn't, and he's just, you know, an average starter, which is fine, and Markstrom's playing like a top 5 player in the league, or top 5 goalie in the league, and you've handed him to a divisional rival that you play 10 times, man, you're going to have to chew on that constantly. Like, just every 3 or 4 days, you're chewing on Markstrom lighting it up down the road.
Against you.
Against you, and a lot of times. But, the Oilers, I mean, it's not desperation. It's 4 games, they're 1-3. But, you know, the
shocking,
Leafs are coming
Brian,
off.
It's somewhat shocking how you're already at that point with this team where it's like four games in, you're like, they're in like crisis panic mode already. It's like, can't score on the power play, and our goaltender is right now an AHL goaltender. So what the hell are we going
to
do?
And probably not the team they're looking to play tomorrow night. You know, the Leafs have played really well the last two games. The Leafs are arguably the best team in the division. The Leafs are looking to continue to prove that they've changed. You know, and that's the thing. There might be years in the past where you'd say, you know what, Toronto's a perfect spot. McDavid's home, family's in the building, place will be rocking.
Yeah.
That's not going to be accessible.
Still, though, you have to take your opportunity because these teams are going to be zooming in here, and there's ups and there's downs. And when you know McDavid's a little bit grumpy, their power play stinks right now, and their goaltender stinks, you say, we beat the hell out of these guys Wednesday night, and we do it again on Friday, and it's up to them to figure out what they're going to bring the next time we play them. There's all going to be ups and downs in a season, and when you're catching a team on a downer like that, you take advantage. You say, watch this, goaltender.
Yeah, exactly. And at least take the first one tomorrow night and you're free rolling going into Friday, you know, in a way, you know, from a mental standpoint. Even if you lose Friday, you're like, hey, we got to split. And then the Leafs will hit the road. They head out to Calgary on Sunday night.
That'll be fun. I'm looking
forward
to that. That'll
be a really good game. But, yeah, this is a time to take advantage because Edmonton is reeling here. Their goaltending looks terrible. 5-on-5 has not been good. Like, there are shots going to the bench. Dave Tippett is losing it. Like, he's behind a mask, but you can tell he is fuming.
Brian, that's what I'm talking about. Dave Tippett's been losing it. Guess who else has been? Our boy Hitch.
Yeah, he's done it.
McClellan.
Todd McClellan did it. Yeah.
These aren't junior guys or guys that coach junior C. These are bona fide NHL coaches that have been miffed by what these guys are doing out there.
But Jeff, like you were talking before about McDavid, what this whole thing kind of speaks to is you have to do so much right over such a long period or you're screwed. Like you can't turn it around in one summer or two summers. You know what I mean? Like you have to draft well for so long. So like
well,
when you get to this
Jonas,
point,
that has been a big part of the organization, but McDavid's been there for what? You guys just mentioned it last hour, 6 years?
Right, but like for a big
chunk. Did you
of that,
think this is where he would be in year six of his time at Edmonton?
They haven't run the team well. Like that's what happens, right? Like if all those years they're not picking well and they're making bad signings and they're doing poor things, the team is going to be in a terrible place, and that's
question is, and I'm not trying to stir the pot here. The question is, a player in his prime.
Yeah.
And we just saw it with James Harden in the NBA.
Jack Eichel like in the offseason, right?
Well, Jack Eichel, whoever you want, but a player in his prime who thinks he should be challenging for cups, and they say to him, it's going to take us 5 years to fix this.
Yeah.
So Connor McDavid's got to grind it out for 5 years, which I'm sure he will. He makes good money. But
he doesn't have much of a choice. I mean, unless he demands out, he signed an 8-year deal, and he's got 5 left after this. So he's pretty much locked in, and he is along for the ride. He's got a loud voice, I'm sure, in terms of what he wants to see happen. Listen, he's got Draisaitl with him. He's got the third best player in the league with him. Like that's a pretty good starting point. And the two of them make up $20 million of the cap. That's not excessive based on how good they are. It doesn't get you anywhere because of what you said.
Yeah.
Like Shirelli and company have completely sabotaged the plan. They got reckless. They cut corners. They went big game hunting on players that were not big game.
Yeah.
You know, and they spent money on silly players. The Lucic deal. Then you got to bring in James Neal to rectify that. Neal can't keep up. He can't play anymore. Like there's just it's you're right. They fell into this kind of rhythm where they said we have these two guys, so everything else can and will work out. Whatever we throw at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been proven that that is not true. And another issue that they had was the time. If you got McDavid the first time you were up at the podium, first overall, you would probably be willing to accept some more patience. The problem is in that market, by the time McDavid came, they have been awful for a decade.
After having a bunch of top picks.
After picking Nugent Hopkins in Hall and Yakupov. So I kind of understood, even though they did it wrong, and in retrospect they never should have gone down this road, where they said, all right, we got McDavid, we got to go now. You know, sign this guy, trade this guy, make this move, make that move. And 90% of them failed, and now they find themselves in a position don't win the game for them, they can't win.
No, they have zero chance of winning unless they dominate like the other night where McDavid had 3 or 4 goals and Draisaitl was dialed in. And it's like that's the only way they win. It's the most – I would say it's so awkward to say with the quality of those two players, just with two of the best players on it. And when they leave the ice, they instantaneously become one of the worst teams in the league.
It could not be more black and white. Like, mm-hmm. they're on the ice, and you're like, this is maybe the best team in the league, Draisaitl and McDavid. If they're on the ice together, the opposition is reeling. Like, the opposition is thinking, how do we survive and get them off the ice? The second they get off the ice, you're like, okay, this is a bottom five team in the league.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Teen Wolf just comes off and Chubbs goes on.
Exactly. Or it's Teen Wolf and he morphs back into Michael J. Fox.
Yeah.
You know, like that, and that's exactly what comes over the board. Some guy who's 5'5", 125 pounds.
But, like, guys, like, think of all, like, as much as we criticize, like, the Leafs in the last few years, think of all, like, the little things that they've done right. Like, they find Justin Hall. They trade for Zach Hyman. They find Ilya Mikheyev. They get this Mikko Lehtinen. Like, they pick Travis Dermott in the second round. Like, all these little things that you do add up. And if you look at Edmonton, it's like, how many of those things can you find? And it's less.
Yeah,
I would point to more significant things. They drafted Austin Matthews.
Yeah,
they drafted Mitch Marner. Then they signed John Tavares. This little stuff nibbling on the outside, like you're doing right now.
I disagree. That,
it all matters, though.
It does all matter.
It does. But if you're talking about what really influences wins and losses.
Oh yeah, I know.
And
you're
as
right
far
about
as
that.
An organization plays and is looked upon, like those.
But you could keep adding to that list, Muzzin.
Yes.
Brody, Freddie Anderson.
Even, you know, picking Nylander, like, as much as, like, he wasn't, like, the obvious slam dunk pick.
Right. Yeah.
Nick
Ritchie was a guy that they were looking at.
I was very proud, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, and even with saying that, the Leafs have won nothing.
Nothing.
That's
like,
right.
So put that into perspective.
Yeah. That's how hard it is to win.
It's hard.
The Leafs, exactly. And meanwhile, in Edmonton, rightly would sit there and say, tell me again what the Leafs have won.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. they
and Jonas, you're right. Those things are important to ice a team of quality that has depth and to find certain things and find guys somewhere. I'm not.
No, I know what you're
taking
saying.
Away
saying,
from the work that Kyle has done to acquire all those.
We don't. None of this matters if they don't get Matthews. Like, and that's like a ping pong ball. So like that's fair, but like you have to do so many little things right along the way. Or you're in this position where you're constantly kind of chasing your tail.
Yeah, like there was a lot of talk with Tampa Bay about trading for Goudreau and Coleman. But at the end of the day, when the Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup, who were you talking about? You were talking about Vasilevsky being a monster in net, Hedman being an absolute stud on D, Braden Point and Kucherov scoring every time.
And those guys are like second
there.
And third round picks.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, you're right. I mean, Point went in the third round, Kucherov in the second. Vasilevsky was first. Hedman second overall. Stamkos didn't play a lot, but first overall. And the thing is, and I don't know which one is the easier, which one is the harder.
Bottom line is you need all of it to win.
Yeah.
You do, but
you need luck.
You need to get those core pieces first, right? Like if you look over the past 15 years, Pittsburgh took Sid first, Geno second, Fleury first, Stahl third. Okay, then it was like, wow, we got Letang. Then you've got this guy, that guy, and the other guy. Washington, the same thing. Ovi first, Backstrom fourth. Carlson was a first-round pick. You know, then you find an Oshie. You find Tom Wilson, et cetera, et cetera. All these great teams, you had to get those main core pieces. Edmonton has them. Like, Edmonton is as good, if not better. Outside of Malkin and Crosby, there's not a better 1-2 punch over the past 15 years in this league. Like, I just don't think there is. In terms of domination, in terms of top five picks that came together, I would include Kane and Taves in that. Kane went first, Taves went third. I think McDavid and Draisaitl collectively are better players. It doesn't mean it will lead to more wins, you know, because Taves can't run like those two can based on putting up points, but Jonathan Taves is an all-world player and brings more to the table than those guys do defensively and in different areas. But they have those two locked in.
But they also
And now
missed,
it's to find everything else, and they've missed on almost everything
Well,
else.
And they missed on some big stuff. Like, you missed top five with Puljujärvi. Big miss. Like, you were talking about Vancouver. Like, Vertanen's, he's like an NHL player, but that's like, what was he, sixth overall or something? Ulevi, like, you're not sure. Like, you have to, like, nail that obvious stuff and then, like, make all these other small moves to win.
Puljujärvi,
you know, the
there's another guy there. I thought that guy was just flat out stud from the word go, and he's back at Edmonton again this year. I don't know if you saw last night, Hayes, but that's not exactly jiving.
It's not.
Right
it's
now.
Not bringing a ton. And the guy that was on the ice on the other team went two picks later, in Matthew Tkachuk, And that's just going to burn people.
Oh my God,
in Vancouver
for a long time, or
in Edmonton, and even what I was going to say was in Vancouver. I think they took Ole Ullevi with the fifth pick.
Yeah,
I think Puljujärvi went fourth, Ullevi went fifth, Matthew Tkachuk went sixth, and that's a game changer. Like that's a miss right there. You know, like it's. Could you imagine if Tkachuk is in Edmonton, how different they feel? If Tkachuk is in Vancouver, how different it feels?
Yeah, Tkachuk playing with McDavid.
That's the guy you're looking for.
Oh,
you know, Drysdale, it doesn't matter. It's like all of a sudden you've got your top six just based on those three. Like you've noticed that with the Leafs. They have their big four, and you can tell Sheldon Keefe doesn't really care that much who plays with them. You know, like because I think if it was we got to put together our best line, Zach Hyman is on one of those two.
Sure.
But he has the luxury of saying, I'm going to balance it out. Zach, you're going to play in the third line. I think Mikheyev is good enough to play – up the lineup in terms of what he can bring over, maybe what Thornton can bring in his career right now, and what Joey Vesey is as a player. But I think you connect on those four guys, it just affords so many more options, and you can spread different players throughout your lineup because you got the four of them cooking, and it's a huge benefit to have. And if the Leafs play like they did last night and they play like they did on Saturday night, they're going to win a lot of games. Like a lot of, that's what you would expect. That's a lock playoff team. I mean, that goes without saying. It's a top four. I don't know if it's necessarily first overall, but it's a lock playoff team. And I think they're probably saying that in Montreal, and they're saying it in Calgary right now.
Yeah.
You know, like a week into it, there's three teams that have been impressive in the country right now. It's Toronto, Montreal, and Calgary. And
the rankings
Winnipeg,
proved it yesterday.
Yep. That's right. Alice Brothers' rankings proved it. He had those specific teams. I think he had. What do you have? Toronto 1, Calgary 2, Montreal 3? Might be off on that, but...
Yeah. Noodles loved that segment. Noodles loved that segment.
Noodles was very fun. I think it's going to be fun just to trigger Noodles every week with Al's Brothers.
I told Al's brother yesterday, you saw the text, he should mess with Noodles and ask him for his list as a reference point and then go totally against it. Whatever Noodles had won, you rate it 7 and just watch Noodles explode.
And you say, I've been talking to people throughout the game, and collectively this is how we feel.
Yes. And watch Noodles' head pop off his shoulders.
Yeah, although, listen, Noodles, he didn't like where Vancouver was slotted, and I can't disagree. They have looked thin. Like, they look like
they
are
missing.
That
was the Mikey Canuck factor.
He's a fan. And the problem out there, my understanding, is Elias Pettersson has not put his skates on yet this season. Like, has decided he's not taking over the game yet. And if Pettersson's not going to be dominant, gets back to what we've been talking about for 15 minutes. You know, it's got to start with
your fighting
big dog.
Chance anyway.
Yeah,
exactly.
you got to have him dominating, and he's capable of more than capable of doing that. Just hasn't played well enough yet. Brent Burns will join us. He is into the acting game now. His new character debuted on Vikings this past week, which is on History, and you can find it online. And he looks like a Viking. He's got the beard cooking. He's got the long hair. And his San Jose Sharks are off to a decent start, and they're looking to bounce back considering what happened a year ago. So we'll catch up with Brent Burns. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the NHL board tonight, I like the Rangers at home against New Jersey. And I'm looking for totals. I'm going over the number, Chicago, Florida. And under the number, Columbus, Detroit tonight. Throw down 20, you can score 87. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine is the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. 8 games in the NHL tonight. Ottawa, Winnipeg, that's where Noodles is. He's calling his first game tonight. And I think he's back tomorrow, but I have no idea. Like trying to keep track of the schedule with
Dude, that guy's schedule,
back.
He is hit or miss. Who knows where he is?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe you know, Jonas. Are you back on the show tomorrow?
Or? No, I think Thursday.
Okay.
So he'll be back.
I guess Noodles is back tomorrow. So that's a good sign. Or maybe he's back all week. That's what I'm hearing. So I don't know about that, Jonas. You got to talk to the grappler and stuff. I just stay out of it. I mean, all I know is I'm on at 4. You know, that's I come downstairs. I turn everything on. And we move on with our day.
I am on at 4-2. And all I care about, the guy in the middle, won't be. Carry on, Hayes.
You and Jonas are meeting for coffee tomorrow, right?
We are. If Jonas is up for it, I'll be willing to do it.
I don't know if that's an essential service or not. I
mean, okay, you're right. We can't do it right now.
Potential issue. But the video, you guys could do a Zoom chat, little coffee, Zoom, some video, break it down. Eye test versus Corsi. I like
it. How about this, Jonas? I'll look at the game myself, and I'll send you video clips. Okay?
That would be good. All right.
All right, okay. Thank you.
All right, we got Brent Burns on the line. And Brent's, I mean, we all know about his hockey career. He's from this area, more or less. He's a Barrie guy. And now he's into the acting game. He's going Hollywood on us. And his character debuted on Vikings this past week, which airs Wednesdays at 9 p.m., again, on History. And his character is named Skane. He's a big, formidable, and ruthless Viking leader, a man of few words but a big reputation as a warrior. That'll work. Here he is from the San Jose Sharks, a.k.a. Skane. Here is Brent Burns. What's up, Brent? It was a pretty good intro, too, and just crickets. Nothing.
It was a tough following, too.
That one felt good, too. Like, I kind of hit all the notes.
Oh, you did. You did everything right. You did everything right. You plugged everything. You pumped his tires. You made him feel good about himself. And then...
just crickets. Like, we never do a guest the final segment. I don't think we've ever done this in the history of the show. And you make exceptions because you get a guy like Brent Burns who's willing to come on.
I know.
But then the phone goes... maybe he's, I don't know where he is.
And you don't like to point the finger, but that's squarely on Mullen. There's no other.
Don't blame Mullen.
Yeah. I'm just saying that that's his department.
He's such an idiot here.
Yeah.
No, and, no, I'm not.
Well, apparently I mispronounced it, too. It's Skaney or Skaney or something. I don't know. The grappler's trying to write me. Like, this is information I probably could have used at, I don't know, 3:30 this afternoon as opposed to 6:45. I'm just reading off the sheet. You know, like that's I'm burgundy when it comes to these situations.
Guys behind the glass, man, they're making it tough right now.
Yeah. Well, apparently we have him back. You there? You got us, Brent? No. Okay. That's probably going to be
that's
enough
curtains
for us.
On that one.
Yeah. We'll plug the show and shout out to the Sharks.
It's
go
a
Sharks,
great
go.
Show. He looks awesome. Yeah. He's got tarp off like him and Jumbo Joe down in Pitt, and that's all you need to know. Skaney.
There he is, Skaney. He's a man of big reputations. Few words and big reputation. I like that. I got to check that show out. That's the show that Donaldson was on.
Yeah.
Remember Josh Donaldson years ago was on that show? And
you put yourself out there when you do that kind of stuff. Guys like to expand their horizons, but guess what? As soon as your play dips a little bit, the old, oh, maybe this guy's not focused on NHL hockey enough and the rumblings start, and then you put yourself on the hot seat. So I don't know the timetable of this stuff, whether it's crossing – work duties or what his obligations
are. Off season stuff, I'm sure. I mean, I wonder, like, when does LeBron's movie come out? When does Space Jam 2 come out? Like, I have no reference on movie debuts anymore, right?
All I've seen about it was a little blurb on it on Twitter the other day where they had a picture of him and the cartoon thing behind him.
Yeah, they're going to start plugging. Like, there's going to be a massive promotion behind that. And you know LeBron will be a part of it. But, like, my understanding is these big theaters and these big studios are trying to hold off until you can get back into the theater, you know, because no one's going to the movies right now. And I think it's going to come back and be bigger than ever. I was having this conversation with my wife last night. I've never been a big movie goer myself, like, my whole life. It's just not been something I'm dying to do. I go occasionally, might go a couple times a year maybe. Now that I got kids, I'll bring my daughters with me. You know, it's something to do, and especially if my wife's working and we're looking for time to kill, hey, let's go catch a movie, grab some lunch. Like, it's a good outing. But it's never been overly appealing. I would do anything to be able to go in to a theater tonight, like jam-packed theater for a new Bond movie or something like that.
Dude, I completely think you are way off base with that. I think it's going to be almost impossible for an industry like movies. I can't even imagine sitting right beside a stranger right now without a mask on and watching a movie. I think that is so far away, and I don't think anybody's going to be up for that for a long time.
But when it comes
Hayes
back,
loves the movies. I don't. Jonas, where are you at as far as the movies?
I'm like in the middle.
Come on, Jonas. Have a take one way or the other.
Show some stones.
Is it going to be alive or is it going to die? That's the question. Do you think it'll come back? I think it's going to be the roaring 20s.
No, I don't think it'll be. I think closer to Jeff. Like, I don't think it'll be dead, but maybe like it'll be like a seat and then an empty seat and then a seat. For a while?
Well, you basically have that anywhere with these new high-end theaters where you can pick your spot before you get there.
But he's right. Like, if the guy next to you coughs, you're going to be like, what's this guy
not
about?
In 2 years.
I don't know.
I don't intend on living my life like that the rest of my life. I mean, I listen, I get it. We're all freaked out. We've all been jolted here, and there's paranoia, and, you know, I get it. You can't live like this the rest of your life. Someone sneezes and you run home. You know, like, it's at some point we're going to get back to normal, and I am pining for those times. And I think a part of that will be the acceptance that, you know, it's back. Let's go live. Let's go catch a movie. Yeah. Because, like, my wife was saying last night, well, you can see everything from home. I'm like, I know. I have seen everything from home.
And it's
not
the same, right?
For 10 months. It's not the same. And it's not – the novelty is gone. Like, I think that's another thing that has happened here.
Yeah.
In the last, like, 10 years, everything's on demand, and we're like, wow, this is amazing. This is great. All I got to do is stay home. I don't even have to go. Now it's like, I've been staying home for 10 months. I got to get the hell out of here.
Well, and sometimes, dude, like, movies, you just watch 10 minutes, and you're like, yeah, I'm out of this.
Well,
which
yes,
you wouldn't do in a movie theater.
You commit
the money. You're like, I'm just going to watch this.
And it's a night, right? It's a part. It's not even necessarily about the movie. I'm not saying I'm going to turn into Siskel and Ebert here. I'm saying it's the experience. It's, I got a place to go. I'm going to get tickets. We're going to go out for dinner beforehand.
Popcorn.
That's a part of it. You know, I really think that once we get through this, and I don't have a timeline on that, it's going to be roaring again. Like, I think the bars are going to be packed. I think concerts will be even more expensive because it'll be impossible to get tickets. Like, when the amphitheater opens up, it probably won't be this summer. Let's say next summer, and everything's cleared, and COVID's way behind us and a thing of the past. Some massive band rolls through town on a Friday night in July.
Or OVO.
OVO, whatever it is. That place will be rocking. It'll be packed. And no one's going to be walking around with a mask. No one's going to be concerned that someone's standing beside them.
Have you guys ever heard of people ordering movie popcorn to their houses?
Yes.
I know a guy
who does, son does that.
Yes, that's
Sean does
who
it
I was thinking of.
Quite often. He even admits to it publicly.
I know. We've talked about it. Can you believe that?
No, I can't. I think that's insane.
It just proves that Bobby spoiled him when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And he gets whatever he wants.
No, yeah. Sean's great, but
I've never even thought of – I'll be honest. I'm going to admit to something here. I've never used – like an app to order food.
Ever.
Me neither. Ever.
No. Seriously.
I go pick it up.
Yeah.
I call and I go pick it up. Like, I just, it's not, I don't, it's not a convenient, and if I call somewhere, I'm just like, can I get delivery? Like, I call the restaurant. I don't go on any of these apps. And I know that they're, like, they are making bank, these apps. Like, they
well,
are
because they take too much
than,
from the places.
But that's a big, that's what's really been revealed here, is that a lot of the local spots are like, man, these places are killing us here. They're taking like 20%, you know, and you got to do it. You got to have it accessible because so many people are using, you know, all these different apps. And I understand why people do. It's incredibly convenient. And you can have someone just go pick up movie popcorn and bring it to your house.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible technology. I'm not pushing back on the evolution of society. I'm just saying I personally don't use it. I just call and go pick it up.
I could do the movie corn, I think. Like an extra large Diet Coke and a jumbo corn with extra butter halfway and then on top.
Yeah.
Like
I miss a fountain pop, which I just don't have much anymore. And there is nothing better than a fountain Diet Coke, like a extra butter popcorn and
yeah,
just setting up shop. I might do that for the Super Bowl. I might do that for the Super Bowl. Just
like melt some butter.
Own it. Yep. Anyway, shout out to Brent Burns. You know, I don't know what happened there. It's on
Grappler.
It's on the grappler.
Well, there's nothing you can do. I mean, it happens. He called in. He was there. We tried to patch it in. We tried to do it twice. It didn't work out. Probably tells us. Maybe it's a lesson. We never book anyone at 6:40. You know, there's nothing we can do. We tried and move on with it. So tomorrow we get the Leafs in action. We get the Raptors in action tomorrow night. We're itching closer to a big weekend in the NFL. I hope you and Al's brother are kind of thinking about your picks.
We are. We are thinking long and hard about that. He's thinking about his North Division rankings for next week and the football picks. So excited about
that. I think you guys will have – I'll have first pick this week if we're going back and forth.
Excuse me. When we get to this point, you flip.
Okay, right. We're going to flip over the next 2 weeks. Each week we flip on a Friday. Okay. So we'll be flipping on a Friday. I think Noodles will be back tomorrow. Jonas, great stuff today. Very provocative.
Sorry.
No, I listen. I love it. It's great content. You and O-Dog, I love it. Jeffrey O'Siegel, just two minds
the
coming
summit
together.
Will be important for sports.
I think it's going to mean a lot.
Yeah.
I think all the daily papers should be there. I think the news network should be there. They should cover it like a – Doug Ford presser. Like the two of you coming together talking about the game and changing the game. I think that's what's important. All right, boys. Good stuff. As always, thank you, Jonas.
Thanks,
Jonas Seager from The Athletic. Noodles will be back tomorrow. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.